It is May 24th, 2011, official podcast of Gerwick.net. I am Steve Gerwick, the webmaster of Gerwick.net, and tonight alongside with Adam Fairfax. How are you doing tonight, Adam?
I'm doing good. I'm slowly losing the ability to breathe through my nose, so I'm going to do my best to hang with you tonight, but always a pleasure, Steve, to be back here on the official podcast for Gerwick.net. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, and as usual, it's the plethora of things to talk about, but I would think probably overshadowing every topic that we have tonight was the passing of one of the all-time greats, Macho Man Randy Savage, tragically passed away on Friday. We don't know all the details yet. There has been an autopsy completed, which is inconclusive. There were, of course, the reports that he suffered a heart attack while driving in his Jeep, and I guess we'll just kind of wait and see, you know, what the medical examiner ultimately decides as far as cause of death. But, you know, whatever it is, the main thing is that we lost one of the all-time greats. You know, I have vivid memories of Randy Savage going back to the 80s, obviously with WWF. I always thought he was one of the all-time great heels. So many memories of him and Elizabeth together, you know, Elizabeth down that aisle, and great feud with George Animal Steel, where they always go back and forth with Elizabeth, and he was obsessed with Elizabeth and tear up the turnbuckles, and obviously had great feuds with Tito Santana for the Intercontinental Championship. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, of course, is probably, you know, when you talk about the annals of WrestleMania history, that's always been a match that people point to, the WrestleMania 3 match at the Pontiac Silverdome, Savage and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. You know, two great legends in that match. And then, of course, later he turned babyface. He had the mega powers. You remember that angle. And then, of course, one that I was flashing back to was the angle they did with Jake the Snake Roberts, where the Cobra bit him. And that was very graphic. And then, of course, he went to WCW, became a part of the NWO. And in recent years, we've seen him, you know, pop in and out of TNA. But, boy, Adam, what can you say about him? I mean, he is, we were just talking offline that he doesn't need to be in the Hall of Fame to get his true recognition that he is one of the all-time great technical wrestlers, one of the great promo guys, very colorful. And, you know, what can you say? He's just one of the all-time great professional wrestlers.
Absolutely. Randy Savage, definitely top 10, probably top 5, all time. Just a great, amazing talent, the things that he did in the ring. Really a pioneer on a national stage for guys that were a little bit of a smaller build. You know, of course, before breaking into the professional wrestling business, he was a minor league baseball player, had aspirations of playing professional baseball. I know that he was in the Reds farm system for a while. And, you know, that's for him to transition from baseball to wrestling and do so well. You know, wrestling's in his blood. His father, Angelo Poffo, Mr. 6033, Blaney Poffo, the genius, his brother, you know, wrestling's in their blood. It's in the family. But for him to transition and just really, you know, surpass anything that his father did. And you know, I mean, who wants to be the brother of Randy Savage? You know, just one of the greats. And one of the sad things for me about this whole situation with Randy Savage is that, you know, you see so many of these guys, these big stars from the 70s and 80s, they have a hard time adjusting to life outside of the ring. You know, you look at Hogan, and we saw the Hogan Knows Best reality series. I just watched, actually yesterday, the E! True Hollywood Story about Hulk Hogan and his family, and we've just seen so much controversy and the bitterness and of the divorce with Linda, and we've seen the same thing with Ric Flair and his numerous divorces and the altercation that he had with his daughter's boyfriend and, you know, the drinking and the partying and all this stuff, and you hear about all these guys, they have such a hard time adjusting to life after, you know, their wrestling career ends and life outside of the spotlight. But Randy Savage, you know, I think it was about a year ago, I want to say, and maybe not even that long ago, but he was remarried. The woman who was, you know, obviously, I mean, it's his wife, but the lady that was involved in the car crash with him From my understanding, they were college sweethearts, basically. They had dated in college and then lost touch. And after all this time, somehow they'd gotten back together and got married. And I've seen photos from the wedding. It was on the beach. It looked very nice. And Savage seemed to be adjusting very well to life outside of wrestling. I know that Angelo Poffo, you know, was very sick, and Savage basically put his life on hold to take care of his father. So just a very tragic thing. It's a sad loss. You know, Randy Savage, one of the greatest of all time. Of course, the WrestleMania 3 match, everyone's going to talk about that. My favorite angle with Randy Savage is probably the Ric Flair feud that he had in the early 90s leading up to their match at WrestleMania 8, I believe it was, in Indianapolis, and the photoshopped photos of Elizabeth and Ric Flair saying that he had dated her first and all that, and that was probably my favorite angle with Savage. But the guy was just, he was a truly, truly talented guy, and the world of professional wrestling really lost a legend.
Yeah, definitely. And, of course, the Slim Jim commercials, which I think really elevated Slim Jim. I remember everybody saw, you know, snap into a Slim Jim, and you saw all the commercials. You would see those commercials on regular programming, not just wrestling shows. So it was, I think it really, you know, caught a nerve, and people were actually buying the product because they loved those commercials. And not to mention that Slim Jim is a good product. I've always endorsed Slim Jim.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Without a doubt.
But I think Randy definitely made it cool, you know, to snap into a Slim Jim. It was a great catchphrase. And obviously using Randy and his colorful attire was really cool. And there was actually a couple of things we'll mention with Randy when we get to Raw. Again, you know, we lost one of the greats. It's very sad. I remember, you know, I got a couple of text messages on Friday, and that there was reports that Randy had passed away. And it's just one of those, I've been covering wrestling for a long time, and every now and then you get in your emails that, or a text message even, that so-and-so is reporting that so-and-so has passed away, and, you want to find out if this one is true or not. And of course, when it was Randy Savage, being that he's one of my all-time personal favorites, I was hoping that, this was a false report. And then TMZ, which has been, getting more and more involved into all aspects of entertainment, of course, sports entertainment, actually broke the story that, Randy was involved in the car crash and the car accident. And obviously it was true. And, very sad loss. And we'd like to definitely send our condolences out to the Poffo family, Lanny Poffo, the genius, and, of course, his wife, who was involved in the accident, who last report has been released from the hospital, which is good news. But, rest in peace, Randy Savage. And, of course, we'll talk a little bit more about Randy Savage when we get to Raw. But yesterday, Monday, May 23rd, the 12th anniversary of the passing of Owen Hart, and I did have Smith Hart on the interview yesterday, which was a great interview, very honest guy, and boy, I tell you, you ask him about anything, he's got a comment on it. And you know, we were reflecting on Owen's career and all different aspects of Owen, where he was going at the time of his passing, what was going on before the Montreal screw job, the possibility of him leaving, and then of course he was brought back to television. Did the angle with, or had a tag team with Jeff Jarrett. And of course they wanted Owen to, be in a relationship with Deborah. They wanted to tease that. And of course he didn't want to do it because, you know, he's a family man and his kids are watching the show. And I guess the saddest aspect when I was talking to Smith Hart is that there's a very strained relationship with Martha Hart, Oj and Athena, Owen's children, that, you know, I was asking Smith, you know, when was the last time you actually seen your nieces and nephews? And it was a short time after Owen had passed away. So it's been, a long, separation between the Harts and, Owen's children, which is very sad, the situation there. And, you know, like I said, it's been 12 years now. It's hard to believe it's been 12 years since the passing of Owen Hart. And again, it'll be one of those situations where you remember where you were when you found out that Owen had passed away, because I think we're just like programmed to, you know, anytime anything like that would happen, you know, retirements or major injuries, we're just programmed to believe that, you know, it's a work. And then I remember obviously watching that pay-per-view, and you could tell in Jim Ross's voice that this was a very serious situation. And then about halfway through the pay-per-view, Jim Ross had the task of informing everybody that Owen had passed away. And, you know, like I said, it's hard to believe it's been 12 years since Owen has been with us.
Yeah, it's absolutely hard to believe. And, you know, the number one thing is that I'd wonder where he'd be today. I wonder how his career would have played out, what heights it would have reached. I've read the Martha Hart, I guess autobiography, if you will, kind of her story about how she met Owen and her relationship with Owen and all of the, you know, the happenings of their relationship throughout his career in professional wrestling and with the children and all that. And they were actually weeks away. I don't even know if it was weeks. It was days. If it was weeks, it was one or two. But they were days away from moving into their dream home that they had built. And Owen had talked several times, you know, I mean, this is common knowledge pretty much. People know this. But Owen had talked about several times about, you know, getting out of the wrestling business altogether. But they had just built this home. They had finished it. And, you know, he was going to stick around. And Vince gave him the goofy gimmick of the blue blazer, which Owen Hart pulled off. Everyone talks about how, oh, it was a silly, goofy gimmick and he shouldn't have done it, you know. It's kind of like Dusty Rhodes in the polka dots. Owen pulled it off. He did it well. And, you know, to me, when I think back about Owen, I just think back and I start to think about guys like Davey Boy Smith and Brian Pillman and all the wrestlers that we've lost, you know, way too early. And, you know, a guy like Owen Hart, at the time of his passing, you know, he's been around for a good number of years, but he was also at an age where he could have gone for another 10, 12 years. You know, we might still see him, you know, he might be at the tail end of his career now, and to have it end so tragically 12 years ago, just unbelievable. You know, I remember at the time they were doing the whole ministry angle, the Ministry of Darkness, and there was a higher power in the Ministry of Darkness, and it was going to be revealed, and I wasn't watching the pay-per-view when it happened, and I had heard about it, and you know, like you say, we're conditioned to believe everything's a work. And I thought, oh, man, come on. Please don't let this be true. Let it be a work and let Owen Hart come out as the higher power in the Ministry of Darkness, you know, which, of course, we saw it to be revealed as Vince McMahon. But just a tragic, tragic loss for the world of professional wrestling. And the fact that it's been 12 years, just it blows my mind. And, you know, the Hart clan, they're a strange group. I've read Bret Hart's book several times as well. I definitely recommend both books. But they're a strange group of people. But one thing I think that you have to take away from reading Bret's book and Martha's book is that there's a lot of love in the Hart family, and the fact that, you know, Owen's children and his ex-wife were estranged from the rest of the family, it is tragic. It's horribly sad, because I think that his children and, you know, his son, you know, how old was his son when Owen passed? You know, he wasn't
7.
7 years old.
7 years old, yeah.
He doesn't know his father, you know, and his mother, you know, God bless her. I can't put myself in her shoes. I don't know what I would do. So I can't say that any decision she's made is wrong, because I can only imagine. But the fact that the children don't have anything to do with the rest of the family is sad, because they're the ones who knew Owen best, you know. I mean, obviously other than their mother, but she, you know, she has always kind of stayed away from the wrestling business. You know, the brothers and the aunts and uncles and all that, you know, they're the ones who can tell stories about the kid's father, about Owen, and they can, you know, they can just teach them so much about their father that I don't think that they know. I don't think that they're learning. And it's just a very sad situation. It's a sad situation. And 12 years, it's hard to believe. Even now, it's hard to believe.
Yeah, and I definitely recommend, if you've not listened to the interview I did with Smith Hart, the eldest son, number one in the chain of 12 that Stu and Helen, their children, you know, the big tragedy, of course, you know, as wrestling fans, we lost a great wrestler. But, I mean, the saddest part is the family situation. A 7-year-old son loses his father. A 3-year-old daughter loses her father. Martha Hart, the wife, loses her mate, you know, person that you're married to, that you've engaged in a long-term relationship, and that you expect to spend the rest of your life with, is, you know, tragically taken away in an accident situation. But still, it's a sad situation overall. And a couple of things that you were saying kind of ties in with what Smith Hart was saying. Owen had always talked that he was getting towards the end of his career, that every time this contract would come up, he'd say, you know, maybe this could be my final contract. And then if you listen to the Smith Hart interview, every time his contract is up, you know, Vince gives him a sizable raise to stay, which from a business standpoint, I would say every time, yeah, Vince, I think I'm going to retire. I think this might be it. Yeah, I might just walk away, or use the card that Bret Hart used in 97. You know, you say, hey, Ted Turner's calling, you know, and I might go down to Ted Turner. Because, I mean, obviously this is the era that Eric Bischoff was just, you know, spending money left and right on acquiring every piece of talent he could get away from Vince. But he had definitely talked about that, you know, he didn't want to wrestle until, you know, he was an old man, that he was getting towards the end of his career, that his ultimate goal was to be a firefighter. And he talked to that, you know, when his current contract would expire, he'd become a firefighter and have more of a normal life. Obviously, there's real no normal life when you're a professional wrestler, when you work that WWE schedule, where you're on the road, you know, 180 days or 190 days or 200 days. Back, I mean, back in the day when they were on, it's one of those insane, and you know, like a guy like John Cena, I don't know if he ever sees the inside of his house. The guy's constantly on the move, and he's, you know, he's a married man. It's just, there's like no normal relationship when you're married. You have to be a saint to deal with that. And of course, Martha was committed to doing that, to be the saint wife. And as Smith was saying, that, you know, we've heard about infidelities with professional wrestlers. I believe it was in Bret Hart's book, he admitted that you know, he wasn't loyal in his relationship, but Smith would say, you know, he was loyal to Martha. He loved Martha, always talked about Martha, always talked about his kids. And now today, you know, 12 years later, they have a lot of questions. They don't know. There's a lot of things they don't know about their father because, you know, the professional wrestling angle has been totally taken away. And, you know, as you said, you know, we as fans could be upset with Martha. But until you're into those shoes, until you lose a loved one like she did, and so tragically, that it's very difficult to put yourself in her situation. And obviously the Stu and Helen were involved in the wrongful death lawsuit that Smith also talks about in the interview. But you know, the bottom line is it's been 12 years now, and it's very sad. And you know, this kind of will tie into what we want to talk about next with Raw. Bret Hart was on Raw last night, and he was ushering the opening segment. A lot of people expected when he came out, you know, it's May 23rd. A lot of people know that day because it is the day that Owen passed away, that at least Bret would mention Owen. And then at the end of the show, when he was a special referee for the main event, so many people were text messaging me, twittering me, Adam, that, you know, he's going to take that referee outfit off and there's going to be an Owen shirt underneath it. And they just kind of ended the show like, you know, another angle, another Raw, and no mention of Owen. And it was great to see that they did the Randy Savage tribute, which we'll talk about, but no mention of Owen Hart last night on Raw.
Yeah, it's sad to see that, you know, I mean, it was nice that Bret gets to come back, but Bret Hart's appearance really didn't mean anything on Raw last night. It didn't do anything for the WWE, and it certainly didn't do anything for Bret Hart, so it really meant nothing. And it was the perfect opportunity. You know, I can understand that there are the hard feelings still between the WWE and Martha, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, I would say this to Martha, and again, you know, what a tragedy for her to have to deal with and cope with, and to this day, I mean, you know, I don't think that's something that you ever get over. You know, there are so many people, you see so many people married and divorced, and especially within the wrestling business, like you said, all the infidelities, but I think these two were soulmates, you know. So I don't think she'll ever get over that, but one thing that Martha has got to realize is that Owen Hart was a professional wrestler. You know, he might have wanted to get out of this towards the end of his career with his children and his wife and their new home and those sorts of things, but the guy had a passion for professional wrestling. No one gets into this business and attains the level of fame and success that Owen did without having a passion for professional wrestling. He certainly did. You know, he traveled the world over, wrestled in Mexico, wrestled in Germany. I just finished Chris Jericho's first book, and he talks about wrestling in Germany, and they wrestled in tents. They wrestled literally in tents, and things were no different than when Owen Hart was there. So Owen was a wrestler. He had a passion for this business, and he had a love for this business. So I think out of respect to him, you know, Martha's got to go ahead and say, hey, guys, you know, I don't want anything to do with it, but if you want to pay tribute to Owen, if you want to put together a piece for him, if you want to do something nice, do it. And you know what, too? I think that it would be a great thing for Owen's children to see that. The video on Savage was done very nicely. It was great. And for them to be able to do something like that for Owen and for his children to be able to see that and see how many lives their father impacted and affected and how many people he made happy across the world, you know, around the world, I think it would do a lot for them. And it doesn't have to be, you know, bad or raunchy or any of that kind of stuff, despite the fact that Owen gained a lot of his success during the Attitude Era. And a lot of people were very negative about wrestling back then, but I think for his children's sake, for his legacy, for the Hart family, for everything they've done for professional wrestling, I think it's time that Owen was honored and given the distinct honor of being in the Hall of Fame, to having the commemorative video packages about his life and career. And it's just time that we acknowledge him. We can't keep sweeping him under the carpet. We can't, you know, keep turning a blind eye to the whole situation just because it might hurt so-and-so's feelings or this or that. We've got to acknowledge the fact that Owen Hart was here. He did a lot for this business. He made a lot of people happy. He made a lot of money in this business. But it was something that he loved, something that he was very passionate about, and let's honor and acknowledge that. You know, I can understand that this was Chris Benoit, maybe, you know, and people, you don't want to mention Chris Benoit, that's fine. But Owen Hart, you know, it was a tragic accident. It was no one's fault. It wasn't Vince Russo's fault. It wasn't Vince McMahon's fault. You know, it was just a tragic accident, and it's time that he received, you know, the honor that he deserves.
I really didn't expect to see a video highlight package, which I would, you know, I personally love to see it, but I didn't expect them to do a video package of him. But on a night where Bret Hart is back and it just happens to fall on the 12th anniversary, it seems like, because like you said, you know, Bret Hart on Raw last night really meant nothing in terms of storyline, something for the characters, anything really. And if you have him out there, because he, you know, obviously he was probably there because he worked the pay-per-view the night before, which we'll talk about the pay-per-view in a little bit, but, you know, he really didn't have a purpose out there other than he, you know, end up as a special guest referee. Didn't really mean anything. I don't think he's being involved in any angles. In fact, I think I just read on Twitter where he's, now in Hawaii for like 6 weeks. So I don't think you'll see him anytime, you know, in the immediate future on Raw. So at the very least, he comes out in the opening segment. At least let him acknowledge it's Owen Hart. It's his brother's birthday, and you know, if Martha doesn't agree with it, Martha doesn't agree with it, but I mean, Bret Hart is still the brother of Owen Hart, and there's no reason that he couldn't at least acknowledge that it's the anniversary of his passing. You know, I would have loved to have seen, as people were mentioning, you know, tear off that referee shirt and reveal an Owen Hart shirt. You know, they didn't do that, which is sad.
It could go off the air right at that.
Right.
It could have. Yeah. It could. Brett could have done that.
Sure.
And you know, good night, everybody. God bless.
I was kind of expecting it, because I don't know if translated on my television is they put up the graphic, you know, copyright, and they kind of went off, and then I don't know, they kept the focus in the ring for like another 3 or 4 seconds. I'm thinking, okay, you know, bring it out now, you know, final seconds of Raw, and they didn't do it. Which is sad, you know. You can debate it, you know, whether or not they should acknowledge it or not. But a night where Bret Hart is there, I think would have been a nice, fitting tribute to Owen. But the one go ahead.
I'm just going to say, how about after they went off air? Have you heard anything about maybe there was a mention? I'm just curious. I mean, I'm sure that probably would have been reported by now, but.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything, which is
okay.
I was thinking the same thing you were. Maybe when they went off the air, at least to the live crowd, maybe they would do it. But at least as of this recording, I haven't received that information. But we wanted to talk about the one tribute they did do was the, you know, it was kind of they did at the pay-per-view on Sunday. They put up the in memory of, you know, 1958 to 2011. And then we saw the same thing on Raw to open up the show. We saw his face and his years, and I really didn't expect anything beyond that. And then, I don't know, what, 10:40, we, you know, kind of paused for a moment, and Jerry Lawler was talking about the career of Randy Savage, and I'm not afraid to admit, I was doing the Raw recap here on Gerwick.net, that a couple of tears was in my eyes. I was watching all the footage, and boy, it brought back such memories. The, you know, just seeing Elizabeth and Randy back together, probably the most famous wrestling couple of all time. And it struck a nerve with me. You know, obviously I was always a huge Randy Savage fan. I remember the 80s t-shirt, the purple t-shirt he used to wear with the sunglasses on it. I had that shirt, and that was, you know, Randy was definitely one of my personal favorites. So definitely struck a nerve, and I give him credit. I thought it was a great tribute. I'm glad they did it, and it was much deserved.
Yeah, very appropriate. There are certainly just so many memories there, just watching the clips. And I was impressed, too, that they showed, I mean, it doesn't matter, but, you know, they showed a lot of clips from his career in WCW as well, which was, you know, he spent a lot of time in WCW, so I thought that was pretty cool. You know, a lot of times they'll edit out most of the WCW stuff, but showed a lot of clips of him there. You know, the guy had a huge impact no matter where he went. And, you know, I'll be 100% honest with you. I grew up watching Randy Macho Man Savage. You know, the guy, I can remember my local video store when they got WrestleMania 5, and I rented that thing, must have been 100 times. I can remember Triple H talking about it in an interview, watching a Steamboat Flair match so many times that the tape had worn thin. And that was WrestleMania 5 for me. I watched it over and over and over and over again. Anytime that, you know, I would be home, you know, you're a kid, you're home alone, whatever, that's what was going in. Anytime we went to the video store, we were always getting WrestleMania 5. And you know, as a side note, I'm actually lucky. I actually purchased that copy that I had grown up watching from the video store. But just a lot of memories there, and you know, a lot of childhood memories, and all the great things that Savage did. It was very fitting. The song that went to it, some Coldplay song. I'm not exactly sure of the title, but just a fitting tribute to a guy who deserved it. And with all the, you know, the bad blood between Vince and Randy Savage, and all the back and forth between the two of them, for them to do this, I thought it was a very classy move, and I wasn't expecting it either. I saw the graphic at the beginning, and I just thought, that doesn't really do Randy Savage justice. I know that he, you know, burnt bridges a little bit when he jumped to WCW when he did, but despite the fact that, you know, he might have walked out on Vince and there was bad blood from that, the guy deserved, you know, everything that they did and more. So for me, I thought it was great, and I don't know. A very fitting tribute to one of the greats.
I mean, just the man's intensity. You know, I don't know if there's many guys in this business were as intense with his promos. I mean, when he talked, you were glued to him. He was amazing to listen to. I mean, great promos, great in-ring work.
It changed his natural voice. That gravelly, you know, those intense gravelly promos, his natural voice. If you go back and watch footage of him earlier in his career and as a younger man, you know, when he wasn't in the Macho Man gimmick, his voice was a lot different. But then towards the end of his career, he had been so intense, you know, for so long that it actually changed the, you know, his natural voice. So, yeah, I mean, just one of the most intense guys ever. That perfectly describes him.
Probably the same guy, the guy in Motorhead and the guy in the lead singer of AC/DC. I think probably screaming for so long, it probably naturally changes your vocal cords. And yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is when we see some of these legends pass away now, or they're going in the Hall of Fame, such as, you know, Shawn Michaels just went in the Hall of Fame. It just really, just points to the fact that, you know, there's like a huge generation gap between these superstars, like you said, that we grew up watching, and today's wrestling. That it's almost like, you know, you watch Raw or you watch Impact or you watch, you know, any current stuff. It's like watching vanilla. Like, or having vanilla ice cream. And then back in the day, it's like you went to Baskin-Robbins and you had all these flavors. There was so much, you know, so many different characters, and there were so many different icons and promo styles and colorful attire that today it just, I mean, the current stars are just watered down, generic, bland characters. We've talked about this before. I mean, it goes back every time I see a Randy Savage, I'm thinking, I mean, there's nobody even near a Randy Savage in these days. There's nobody even near a Shawn Michaels today. And then, you know, with Raw this week, we saw not only the video tribute to Randy Savage, which was, you know, first class, we saw a wrestler use the ring attire of Randy Savage, which, boy, I would have thought that would have got a huge pop, but it really didn't. And I was talking to Adam offline. I think the problem was, Adam, the person that was doing the Randy Savage ring attire was CM Punk, who's a heel. And, you know, why didn't a babyface use that ring attire?
I thought it was a little odd, too. I think maybe part of it is also that, you know, that's some classic Randy Savage ring attire. You know, that's from the mid-80s. And then towards, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, things just got flashier and flashier with sequins and you know, all the tassels and all that kind of stuff. So I think maybe people, I want to say that maybe they weren't just as familiar with that, you know, that look of Randy Savage. But, yeah, I thought it would have gotten a bigger reaction than it did as well. When I saw CM Punk come out, you couldn't quite make out the tights. You know, he had a T-shirt on, but I saw the boots and I thought, man, that's pretty cool if that's what I think it is. And then, you know, of course, it turned out to be so. I got to give respect to CM Punk. I would guess, it would be my guess, that that's something that he came up with on his own, you know, and props to WWE for letting him do it. You know, again, like you say, if a babyface had done that, probably would have gotten a much bigger reaction, but I'm not sure who could pull it off. You know, John Cena's wrestling in his jorts, you know, his jean shorts and high tops, so I don't think we could see him in it, and Rey Mysterio, the other babyface in the main event, I don't think him wearing it would mean much. So props to CM Punk. And yeah, I mean, it's a shame that there's not a guy, you know, a top babyface right now that could do it and pull it off. I don't even think Randy Orton. I mean, his character is such that, you know, he doesn't care about anything. You know, I don't know what babyface could have pulled it off. So props to CM Punk.
Yeah, I guess when you put it that way, you know, who would you put put those trunks on? And I guess you make a valid point there. Yeah, it was definitely a good tribute by CM Punk. And let's talk a little bit about Raw this week. And then actually, let's talk about the pay-per-view first. We had Over the Limit on Sunday, which I don't believe Adam saw it. And I saw at least the top matches. I didn't see the undercard. From what I understand, the R-Truth-Rey Mysterio match was very good. And then because some hit and misses. He had the Wade Barrett and Ezekiel Jackson match, and I think the pay-per-view probably really picked up when it was Christian versus Randy Orton. We were talking. I was talking with Adam offline here. Very predictable. I think almost everything on the show that I saw was very predictable, which, you know, it can be predictable and still be good, but this time I just thought the predictable and it wasn't anything special. Of course, we had the match, the blow-off match with Michael Cole and Jerry the King, and then that was a long segment where after the match, Michael Cole, of course, had to kiss Jerry Waller's foot, and he brought out Eve because, you know, Michael Cole's been dissing on the Divas, and especially with Eve out there, and brought back Jim Ross and poured some barbecue sauce on him, and then Bret Hart came out, put the sharpshooter on him, and finally he ended up doing what he had to do. And then we had the main event, which, I tell you, for a main event on a pay-per-view, it seemed like a Raw match with a stipulation of I quit, and it kind of reminded me a bit of an old Hulk Hogan match where Hulk would just get out there and just get annihilated for, you know, 5-10 minutes, and then he'd Hulk up and drop the leg and would be over. And in this situation, it was a long 20 minutes or so where John Cena just beat the heck out of him. The Miz and Alex Riley, of course, he did the blow off at the on Raw to break those two up, but it was just, you know, for a main event, and they did the tape recorder thing, which we've seen before in wrestling, where supposedly John Cena says I quit, but of course it was on tape, so the referee restarted the match, and then, you know, John Cena hulked up, you know, I don't know what else to say, he hulked up, won the match, and I don't know, just one of those, as you said, Adam, just one of those, they do so many of them, but it's just a very predictable pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it sounds like in order to enjoy Over the Limit, you had to be over the legal limit, if you know what I mean. A predictable pay-per-view. We've seen, I'm interested to see where the Randy Orton and Christian feud and angle goes, but, you know, we saw them at the last, the SmackDown right after the last pay-per-view, and we've seen it. I mean, point is that, you know, give us something different. We saw the same match basically when Randy Orton beat Christian for the title, and then you give us the same thing on a pay-per-view. It's just, I don't know. It can be fine. It can be a good match, but it's just not worth $40 or whatever they're charging for me. I mean, if I can see it on SmackDown and I can see the highlights on SmackDown. And, you know, one thing I've heard so many guys that work for WWE say is that there's no time to enjoy the accolades. Yeah, sure, wrestling's not real, and it's predetermined, and guys are told, hey, you're getting the belt tonight. But it's still an honor, and it's still a big deal, especially to these guys. It's their life, you know. But the fact is that they put on a pay-per-view, and the very next night, nothing that happened at the pay-per-view matters. Yeah, sure, we saw the blow-off for Miz and Alex Riley, which I'm really surprised. Alex Riley beat the tar out of Miz, and Miz didn't get in one offensive move, which, you know, the whole time I'm watching it, I'm waiting for the Miz to just pop him once, and Alex Riley goes down, and the tide totally shifts. But, you know, the Miz just got destroyed. But these pay-per-views they put out, they don't seem to mean anything. Feuds don't have any culmination, and, you know, they just get drug out until people are just, you know, too tired of seeing it, I guess. When they first did the brand extension and they had the brand exclusive pay-per-views, they got into a rut of putting on the same show, you know, month after month after month with the same guys at the top, you know, doing the same thing over and over and over again. And the reason that they quit doing those brand exclusive pay-per-views was because people weren't buying them, one, but two, they just got old and stale. And that's the reason why people weren't buying them, but they just got old, they got stale, and they said, you know, we'll freshen things up and we'll have matches from both brands. And then, you know, of course, the third brand, the old ECW there. And these pay-per-views, they don't seem like they mean anything. And for me, it's just not worth plopping down the, you know, the $35, $40 again, however much it is. You know, I can get a great documentary DVD and a book for the same price and get a lot more enjoyment out of this. So it's just not worth it. They're not going to mean anything in the long run. And the annals of professional wrestling history over the limit 2011 is not going to mean a thing. And that's a shame because, you know, they're not WrestleManias. They're not Royal Rumbles. They're not Survivor Series. They're not SummerSlams. But they could be better. They could be important. You know, they could do things to hype these things, and they could do things on these shows that, you know, get people interested. But they're just not doing that. They're giving us the same matches, the same stale, boring endings. You know, John Cena gets destroyed for 20 minutes, and then, you know, all of a sudden, like you say, he hawks up. I don't know. And then, you know, he wins the match, so he's the champion again. So what do we have now? He's going to go into a feud with R-Truth. So then that basically means that Capital Punishment that's getting ready to come up, we're going to see R-Truth and John Cena, more than likely, in some kind of lame gimmick match, a ladder match, or an I Quit match, or an Extreme Rules match. And, of course, John Cena's going to win, and then it's not going to matter. They're going to feed him a new opponent going into the next pay-per-view. When Hogan was on top, and they had him, you know, battling all these monsters, the one thing that they did was make these guys seem invincible. I remember when Hogan first started working with Earthquake. Earthquake came out and destroyed Hulk Hogan. He took him off TV for, you know, a couple months. That's what they need to do. If that's the system that they're going to have with John Cena, where they just feed him heel after heel for all these United pay-per-views, these guys really, they need to get one over on him. You know, they need to build these guys up. But I don't see them doing it. I mean, and they're clearly in a rut. I would guess that if this pay-per-view did 100,000 buys, I'm shocked and I'm way out of touch with, you know, what's going on. Because if this thing did more than that, then, you know, maybe they're doing something right and I'm just lost. It's lost on me. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think this is going to be a one of those pay-per-views where they did a strong number. I think they probably realized that going in. There wasn't a lot of creativity to this pay-per-view. It was only, 3 weeks after the last one. So, again, you know, the average Joe who's getting his May, you know, cable bill, if he orders both shows, that's, $90 just to see two shows. And then, obviously, you're already getting your Raw and your SmackDowns every week. It's really insane. They really need to spread these out. I mean, they really didn't have much time to build up this pay-per-view at all. It just was kind of there. And it's just nothing special on the show. You know, I admit I didn't see the whole show, but what I did see of it, obviously the main matches, there was nothing, it was like nothing you have to go out and see. I wouldn't recommend you get the DVD or order it on replay if you have the opportunity to do that during the week. Just again, another B show, those old in your head or in your house pay-per-view they used to do back in the day, you know, just kind of throw it out there.
They're in your head, you know.
Yeah, in your head, yeah.
But in my head, it was, they're putting on much better shows, I got to say.
Yeah, and then obviously, you know, Super Cena, again, and I agree with you, it's going to be, it's going to be one heel after another until they get to The Rock. I mean, now we see the light at the end of the tunnel, and, as they do that, we're going to see, as you said, you know, heel after heel being fed to Cena. The Truth is going to be first, it looks like, and then we've been talking about doing Alberto Del Rio for SummerSlam. Last night it looked like they did an angle with Del Rio and the Big Show, although it looked like, we'll see, it looked like they did an injury angle with the Big Show, so maybe he'll be out for a time. But I don't know, overall Raw was a kind of a weird show. It was one of those hit and miss. There was things about it I liked. There were certain things about it I didn't like. I think I was writing about in the second hour, 10 minutes in the second hour, there was like 11 minutes of wrestling. And then there was this very strange angle we saw. It was an eight Divas match. 27 seconds in, Karma's music hits. And so Karma's coming down to the ring, and you're thinking, now what are they going to do here? Because they had the babyface and the heel stop the match. They're waiting for Karma to get in the ring. Karma gets in the ring, and I don't know, she drops to her knees. She cries, and that was like the end of the segment. That was it. I mean, we get back from a commercial break. They show she's crying. And I know a lot of people on the GirlWake.net comment board, they just could not believe it. I couldn't believe it either. And as we do this report tonight, it looks like we get the answer. Karma is going to be off TV for quite a while.
Yeah. You know, it came in from, you know, it's being reported, I guess I should say, that Karma has asked for 9 months off. Of the road, off the schedule, off work, if you will. So what's that mean? I guess one can only infer that if she needs a full 9 months off and she did absolutely nothing physical last night, then, you know, looks like we're going to have a
little... 2 and 2 equals 4, right?
Yeah, it looks like we're going to have a little Kong running around. So it looks like Karma or Awesome Kong or her name slips my mind, but it looks like she's going to be a mother, which, you know, like I told you offline, I said, you know, who am I to say, you know, to me, this is career suicide. You've just got signed by the major player in the wrestling business, and they're giving you just a monster push as a monster heel, you know, and... I don't know if this was by accident. I don't know if it was planned, but, you know, you go and you have this happen and you need the time off. You know, it's like we said offline, I think that was probably the last time that we'll see Amazing Kong or Awesome Kong or Karma in a WWE ring and on television. And I said, you know, and I'll say it, that I think, personally, if it was me and she came to me and she said she needed the 9 months off, I would have told her to go home, and I just never would have mentioned her again on television, and that would be that. But in their eyes, they needed some kind of blow-off to her angle, and what they decided on was, why don't you go out to the ring and, you know, break down crying, and that'll be that. Maybe that was foreshadowing what's going to happen after her 9 months off. Maybe they're playing a little joke and think, you know, this is going to be your reaction, sweetheart, because in 9 months, you ain't going to be working for us anymore. But I don't know. Just bizarre.
Yeah, I would be surprised if we'll ever see Karma on WWE television ever again. And I think part of it, you know, have her come out after she's been... you know, kind of pushes this monster diva, and then all of a sudden she comes out and she cries in the middle of the ring. It's like, okay, TNF, if you want her back, go ahead, but, you know, this is what we built her up, and now we're just going to push her right down the ladder, and if you want her back in 9 months, go for it, but, you know, that's it of her, and it's too bad because a lot of people like that angle. I admit I liked it as well. It's something new. They're going to give her a kind of the monster push. I think it was a natural program there with Beth Phoenix being the Glamazon, but, you know, it didn't work out.
It was a wrestling angle. It was wrestling. No matter what they want to call it, you know, it was wrestling. And it's too bad because, you know, that might have been one of our last belts for wrestling angles in WWE.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those situations where I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, if she's pregnant, congratulations, you're pregnant. But on the other hand, you may have just, you know, committed career suicide because, you know, you definitely burned some bridges with TNA with what happened with TNA. I'm not saying she would never go back to TNA. Obviously, she could, but I think you burned your bridge with WWE. This is going to be probably your biggest run. They were pushing you as this monster diva, I guess you would say, and now all of a sudden that's going to be it because they're not – she's not coming back in 9 months. You know, I'd be absolutely surprised if we ever see her get in WWE, which is sad. But, you know, what can you do? I mean, they had those vignettes. They built it up, and she's been on Raw and SmackDown, and then that's it. Sorry about that, folks. Or what's the old Looney Tunes? That's all, folks? I guess that's all, folks. You know?
Yeah.
It's sad. Yeah, it is unbelievable. It's one of those situations that, you know, she made the choice, and that's what she wanted. You know, God bless her, and if it's not, you know, it's just bad timing, I guess. And again, we'll see where they go, but it looks like we'll probably see the future endeavored, you know, the best of luck in future endeavors with WWE, because I'd be surprised if they brought her back. But as I said before, Adam, they did the angle with Big Show, got injured by Alberto Del Rio. And, I mean, out of nowhere, I mean, they were kind of building up Mason Ryan a little bit, and then they kind of fumbled the ball with him. Actually, he lost on that last pay-per-view, got pinned. Which kind of surprised me. I guess they didn't want to beat CM Punk, but Mason Ryan got pinned. And then on Monday Night Raw, kind of out of nowhere, they gave McGillicuddy and Otunga the tag titles.
Yeah, pretty surprising. I don't know if you know, they had that happen, and then after that, of course, we saw the angle with the Big Show. So I don't know if that's you know, if he needs some time off or any certain reason, or just the fact that, you know, the guy's over 7 feet tall, he weighs 500 pounds, and being on the road is a son of a, you know. So maybe the guy just needed to take some time off. I don't know. I didn't really like the tag belts on Kane and the Big Show anyhow. I think that they just, I mean, honestly, I think they've just run out of ideas for Kane and the Big Show as well, really. We've seen the Big Show go from tag team partner to tag team partner. He was with Chris Jericho there for a while, and that was something different. I liked it. But then, you know, we saw Jericho split, and then all of a sudden, Big Show's with The Miz. And it's like, okay, this is kind of the same exact thing they just did with Jericho, and then all of a sudden now he's with Kane. So it kind of just seems like, you know, they're running out of things for these guys to do, which is a shame, because they're both super talented guys, and they're two of the, you know, really the holdouts, two of the last guys from that Attitude Era, you know, other than The Undertaker and Triple H, of course. But they're two of the last guys that are on the road, you know, performing day in and day out. They actually might be the two last guys from, you know, the Attitude Era and the Monday Night Wars that are currently in WWE. So it's really just a shame that, you know, they've got zero direction for them. Hopefully Big Show is taking some time off, and he's going to, you know, come back renewed and have some kind of meaning and direction for his career. I still don't understand why, I believe it's Joe Hennig is going as Michael McGillicuddy. I don't know, you know, I don't know how they're going to make that transition if he ever does decide to go by his given name and acknowledge the fact that his father was Mr. Perfect Kirk Hennig, and that his grandfather, excuse me, is Larry the Axe Hennig. So for these guys to get the tag straps, you know, maybe 20 years ago it would have meant something more when the tag titles actually meant something and there was a tag team division. But at this point in time, it's kind of just like, you know, let's bring in the new guy and give him the U.S. belt or the Intercontinental title on his first night in. And, it, you know, it just doesn't really mean a whole lot. David Otunga was, you know, seemed like he had a lot of momentum going when the Nexus was, you know, first brought in, and during the first season of Next, seemed like Otunga was going to be a breakout star from all of that, you know, with the, you know, the celebrity tie-in or whatever, whoever he's dating. I don't know who, you know, one of the celebrities, and, you know, seemed like he was maybe going to go places and do something, but then he's, you know, just kind of relegated to me with tag matches, and the guys went over, they got the belts, but what other tag teams are there on Raw or SmackDown, for that matter? Who are they going to defend them against?
Yeah, nobody, and obviously now that you broke up Kane and Big Show, I believe what Big Show is on, he was drafted to the Raw brand, so Kane is on SmackDown, correct?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so that splits those guys up anyway. They were just together on Raw because they were the tag team champions. Now that team has been basically dissolved because one's on one show, one's on the other show, and obviously Big Show now looks like he's, you know, injured in the storyline, so you're right, there is like no tag teams on Raw or really SmackDown, other than maybe the core, which of course they're keeping them guys separate right now. But I don't know, maybe we'll see Nexus get a little bit of a push. They certainly need it. But a couple of the other angles I wanted to mention on Raw this week, you really covered the Miz Riley situation, where boy, Alex Riley really got the best of the Miz. I guess, you know, and storyline that makes some sense. Cause now, if you're a Miz fan, you want to see him get revenge on Alex Riley. Because I don't know. Alex Riley just like does nothing for me. I don't know. I know he's a sidekick, and it's hard to really do a lot with a sidekick. But I haven't really seen anything out of him that makes you think he's going to be a superstar. Now, in terms of storylines, if you go with the storylines, Alex Riley was drafted to SmackDown in the draft. The Miz's personal services contract kept him, in theory, from going to SmackDown. Well, if the Miz fired Alex Riley, wouldn't he go back to SmackDown? That makes sense?
Well, it would make sense, yeah. And I honestly would, I probably will look for that to happen, in the coming weeks. I don't think this is any sort of angle that's going to have any kind of longevity. I don't see it going anywhere. You know, Alex Riley's role as a sidekick to Miz wasn't important enough for, you know, this angle to really have any meaning behind it. So I don't think it's something that they can drag out. Excuse me. Maybe they're thinking they can until capital punishment, and that'd be a match. But, you know, Alex Riley, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see the guy. Maybe have one blow-off match with the Miz and then go over to SmackDown and get lost in the shuffle and then, you know, be released within a year. So I got to say that I absolutely hate his ring jacket that he wears to the ring. Yeah. I think it's the goofiest looking thing I've ever seen. And the guy's just completely vanilla. He's got no character. He's got no personality. And it's a shame because the guy might be super talented. That's the one thing that, you know, we don't really get to see with all these guys because, you know, we've said it 100 times and, you know, it doesn't bear repeating. But, you know, we talk about all the same vanilla cookie-cutter guys. You know, there could be some really talented young guys that they've got under contract right now, but we just don't get to see it. We don't get to see it come out because, you know, everything that they do is so mechanical because everything that they do is scripted. If someone wants to be an actor, they'll go to Hollywood, they'll get an agent, they'll take some headshots, and they'll try and get in the game. If someone goes to WWE, you would think that that means they want to be a professional wrestler. That's an argument about scripting promos that, you know, we could go off on a whole other tangent and talk for hours, but, you know, maybe the guy is talented. I don't know. I haven't seen it, but I got to say, in his defense, I don't think he's really had a chance to show us anything.
You know, it probably makes sense. They probably will do the match at the Capital Punishment pay-per-view, and then I would imagine maybe that's going to be it for Alex Riley. Rather than send him to SmackDown and do nothing with him on SmackDown, maybe they'll just, you know, give him his future endeavors as well. That probably makes sense in terms of, you know, where they may be going with that. Of course, as I mentioned on the pay-per-view, they did blow off the Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler feud, finally. Amen to that. And then they
is really so. They're certainly done with it. Absolutely 100% done with it.
what a strange promo. I mean, Michael Cole comes out and he asks for an apology. You know, he apologizes to Cole and he apologizes to Matthews and he apologizes to the cameraman and apologizes to the fans. And then all of a sudden, I just want to sit back down in my chair and be the Raw announcer again. And
why couldn't that have happened the night after WrestleMania? You know, why was it necessary to drag this out? It would have been fine if it had just, you know, happened the night after WrestleMania, but I don't know.
I think the guy's got too much heat just to put him back in the booth because he goes back in the booth now. What's he going to be, a tweener now, or is he going to be a heel, a babyface? I mean, your lead announcer really needs to be a babyface to sell everything, and he's not effective as a heel announcer. Because obviously the heel announcer has to sell a lot of the shows, the pay-per-views, merchandise, etc. He's got so much heat. You know, let him manage somebody. You know, keep him in the ring. You know, that old Jimmy Hart manager, you know, that little puny 140-pound pipsqueak that you want to see him get beat up all the time. I mean,
he's great with a megaphone.
Yeah, I mean, he's got so much heat, and then now all of a sudden, I'm sorry, I'm going back to the booth. Obviously the apology is probably not sincere in storylines, but I don't know. I think they waste Michael Cole. I think he's like one of the most over heels they have in WWE, and all of a sudden he's back in the booth, and that's pretty much
would
it.
Would you have other guests? Like, think back to, say, 98, 99, and, you know, just your average generic Sunday night heat show, and Kevin Kelly and Michael Cole are doing commentary. Would you have ever guessed that fast forward, you know, 12, 13, so odd years later, that Michael Cole would be one of the biggest heels on WWE television?
Well, I guess it's not hard when you were talking that everybody's a cookie cutter.
Yeah,
generic,
that's true.
Boring. I mean, the guy can talk. Who else is there in WWE? I mean, the talent roster is so depleted right now that I think it's more of an indictment rather than giving Michael Cole a lot of credit, which he definitely deserves credit. But I think it's more of an indictment on WWE creative and the characters that they use and the personalities that in this day and age, 2011, Michael Cole is the top heel in WWE. That's really sad. Yeah. And then the other thing I want to mention quickly about Raw was they did a little glimpse where Dolph Ziggler is sitting in the back with Vicky Guerrero, and I did notice Dolph Ziggler's hair is bleach blonde again. So I think somebody got the memo that that was a bad move.
Yeah.
So there will not be.
I mean, you know,
It doesn't matter, but. I mean, one thing about Dolph is he had the hair. It was something different, and I don't know, when he cut his hair, he reminded me of Evan Bourne.
That's so, true. He did.
Which is not a good thing, because you know where Evan Bourne is currently on the roster. So, and that was Raw. I mean, if you want to read the recap, I did at Gerwick.net, GERWECK.net. Definitely check it out. A couple other things before we wrap up this podcast. I know we wanted to mention Impact Wrestling. TNA is making this transition to Impact Wrestling. The first week is Impact Wrestling. Now, of course, they're going with this moniker of Wrestling Matters. Adam saw the show, and what was your thoughts overall of the kind of the new Impact Wrestling?
Well, I think TNA is great at coming up with catchy slogans. You know, they use the "We Are Wrestling" and "Cross the Line." You know, and now we've got Wrestling Matters. But on the first show that Wrestling Matters, we saw Abyss win the X Division Championship, which is not all bad. You know, if the angle goes in the right direction, hey, you know, Samoa Joe wasn't really a cruiserweight type guy, and they said from the beginning that the X Division wasn't about weight limits, it was about no limits. So, you know, I'm not, you know, terribly offended by seeing Abyss win the X Division Championship. It's a shame because with the slogan, you know, Wrestling Matters, I think 90% of the fans would have liked to see just a classic X Division match go out and you know, put what those guys can do on display and have it mean something. You know, let's get that title back to some prominence. But we also saw on the first show of Impact Wrestling, where Wrestling Matters, the illustrious return to the ring of Eric Bischoff, which, you know,
oh,
I mean, come on. You know, the guy, I mean, what can I say? There's so much you can say. Wrestling Matters, now introducing Eric Bischoff. So that was just kind of a... There were just so many wasted segments. And then, you know, another thing that stood out towards the end, and really at the beginning, too, Impact begins the same way every single week. Immortal or Fortune comes out, and, of course, we saw that at the beginning with Immortal coming out. And then at the end, there was a showdown between Robert Roode and Ric Flair. And, you know, I've said it on here before, and I've said it on the comment box at Gerwick.net. I'm a huge Ric Flair fan. I grew up watching Ric Flair. I grew up, to a certain extent, idolizing Ric Flair. He's always been my absolutely, you know, number one favorite wrestler of all time. You know, a little mark-out moment here, but, you know, he's number one pro wrestler in my book. You know, and he is. The guy has done so much in his career, but... Yeah, that's another thing. You know, you got to give a nod to a guy like Randy Savage, because has Ric Flair overstayed his welcome? You know, I've always said that in professional wrestling, age doesn't matter, and especially in this new day where WWE doesn't want to push or sign anyone who's over 30 or even 30, You know, so that means that, you know, if you're 28, 29, even 27, you know, they're probably not taking a very serious look at you. But every time I see Ric Flair on TV, it just, you know, I don't want to feel sorry for Ric Flair. If I want to feel sorry for Ric Flair, I want to feel sorry for him because he's a face in peril. I don't want to feel sorry for him because I kind of feel like he's embarrassing himself a little bit. And he just did the angle with Bobby Roode. He's back to Bobby Roode now. He's not Robert Roode. But he did the angle with Bobby Roode where he got in his face. And Ric Flair towards the end, I should say, I guess it's not the end of his career, but towards the end of his WWE career, you know, he kind of snapped and was playing that crazy old man kind of crazy gimmick where, you know, he had lost his mind a little bit. But to see him come out there in the shape that he's in, just the way that he looks week in and week out, it's just, it's to the point where I kind of feel sad for the guy. And if this is Impact Wrestling where wrestling matters and you've got a 70-year-old man coming out and bleeding all over the place and just cutting insane promos, I just don't think this is what it's going to take to propel them to the next level. So the show overall, you know, we got a lot of talking. We got, like I said, Eric Bischoff and his return to the ring. We got Abyss winning the X Division Championship. For a show that was to kick off the whole new Impact Wrestling era and the Wrestling Matters era, for them to give us what we got, I'm not surprised at all. The ratings stayed right around the same as the 1.2, 1.3 rating. Just brought back Chyna and Wildcat Chris Harris, who I was pretty excited about Chris Harris coming back. Chyna doesn't really do anything for me. I hope that she's clean and sober. I hope for her sake that, you know, maybe she can recapture some of that glory. But TNA's got to do something, and we thought maybe Impact Wrestling could be it. I'm very optimistic about TNA, only because I've been a fan for so long of TNA. I started watching them during their weekly two-hour pay-per-views. I bought a lot of them. And I, you know, I really hope that they can get things together and move forward. But this was just it was a B show, and they didn't really give us anything that mattered. And you know, there was hardly any wrestling.
You know, one they put Mick Foley in a situation where he was on some of the promotional stuff they were sending out. You know, that wrestling matters, and he was doing a. Cutting a promo, which was a good promo, and then I think it was you that mentioned on the comment board that he kind of slapped TNA for TNA attendance.
Yeah, he took a shot at TNA. Something about The Rock made some kind of comment about the I Quit match between John Cena and The Miz, and he said, you know, he had an I Quit match with Mick Foley and at the Royal Rumble in '98, I believe it was, and. He talked about, you know, how he hit Foley over the head with the steel chair 14 times, that Foley bled, and, you know, The Rock went over, and it was a pack house, and it was a great match, and so on and so forth. And Mick Foley responded by saying that, you know, yes, The Rock did win, but that he went on to recapture the title from The Rock a week or however long later. He recaptured the title in an empty arena match. Or AKA a TNA house show. So Mick Foley is supposed to be the mastermind of the network and the whole Wrestling Matters angle, and he's on Twitter, you know, chatting with Brock, and he's taking jabs at TNA. And which led me to believe, which is something that we'll get into real quick next, which, you know, I don't want to jump to it just yet, but the whole Ring of Honor situation, I don't think Mick Foley's days are that long in TNA. I think that he's going to be out of there the first chance he gets. I don't think he likes to play second fiddle to Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff. You know, they brought Foley in just about a year before they brought Hogan and Bischoff in, and they really pushed him hard. He was the executive shareholder, whatever the hell that means, but he was supposed to be a part owner in TNA or something along those lines. I don't think the guy likes to play second fiddle to Hogan, and I think that as soon as his contract is up, I think he's going to be out of there. And if he can, I think by making comments like this, he might try and get out of there a little bit early. And I've heard people say he's heading back to WWE, but I don't personally think Vince is going to offer him anything more than a Legends contract. I don't think there's a whole lot for Mick Foley to do in WWE. And, you know, didn't it just happen for The Rock's birthday that TNA gave Mick Foley permission to appear on Raw? You know, and Vince, of course, shot that down. But I think that Mick Foley, when his TNA contract is up or when he's able to get out of it, I think that we're going to see him head over to Ring of Honor.
Don't you know that Mick Foley is the anonymous Raw general manager? You didn't know that?
That's the game. No.
Would they please end this angle already? Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely.
Every time that thing chimes, it's like, oh, my. And somebody said, why couldn't it be Bret Hart? And I'm thinking, I'm almost sure that one of the things they said about the Raw general manager was that he always hated Bret Hart.
Well, and didn't he take over from Bret Hart? What, Bret Hart, the GM, the anonymous Raw GM, took over for Bret Hart?
Oh gosh, I don't even remember now, but.
I have been told, I've got it on good authority that the anonymous Raw general manager is also the person that was behind the GTV segment, so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, great. I can hardly wait for that one then. Yeah, the Mick Foley kind of was kind of a backhanded slam with TNA. It just kind of reminded me of the dying days of WCW when a lot of the WCW wrestlers would say disparaging things about the company. They even would go on that WCW Live show, which was the internet show that was hosted by Jeremy Borash and Bob Ryder back in the day. They'd bring a WCW wrestler on there, and they would just kind of like shoot on the storylines or their contract situation. So you hope it doesn't get to that point, but I'll probably agree with you. I think probably Mick Foley probably looking for his exit out of TNA, and, you know, why not? There's not much really going on with TNA anyways with him. But you did mention kind of the last thing we wanted to touch upon. On Saturday was the major announcement that Ring of Honor was teasing, and for a change, we actually got a major announcement. Sometimes these major announcements never deliver much. Kerry Silkin, the primary owner of Ring of Honor, did sell Ring of Honor to Sinclair Broadcasting, and you know, we were talking offline. I believe in your area you have a Sinclair station. I don't in my area, and it's one of those situations, Adam, I think, where it could be a good situation where they do have, you know, a lot of good markets out there that they can get the Ring of Honor product in for television. But on the other hand, right off the bat, there's going to be markets they're not in. Like I said, they're not currently in my market. And it could be a situation, too, where I kind of see the old TNA Impact where they're on Fox Sports Net, where there were certain markets, even if it would air in a certain market, that television station could say, you know what, Saturday night, 9 o'clock, or whenever they're going to air it, I believe that's what they were saying, you know, Saturday night time slot. If it doesn't deliver the ratings we want in our local situation, we could say, you know what, let's just show a movie on Saturday night and then preempt Impact or a Ring of Honor Wrestling. So it's kind of a good situation that they're now being owned by a television outlet, but on the same token, they're not on Spike TV and they're not on USA, they're not on Sci-Fi, where they have total penetration through pretty much everybody's TV, either satellite or cable. So, you know, it's good and bad.
I don't, I'll say first and foremost that I'm not a huge Ring of Honor fan. I don't really follow Ring of Honor's product a whole lot. I've always kept up with behind the scenes news and rumors and that kind of thing, and then also, you know, what's going on with the company on television to an extent as well, but I've never been a big Ring of Honor fan. I know that there are a lot of diehard fans out there for Ring of Honor. I've supported them from the very beginning. And for them, I just, you know, hey, it is a pat on the back for Ring of Honor to have reached a level where, you know, a company like Sinclair would even be interested in them. I think the number one, the positive about this new relationship between the two, or I guess the new owners of Ring of Honor, is that they will be able to sink some money into the production values for Ring of Honor. The number one thing that's always held me back from getting, you know, more into the product is just the poor, low production quality. You know, it's basically filmed with a handheld camera that, you know, like I said offline, I can go to Walmart and pay $500 for, and I've got basically, you know, some Ring of Honor television equipment. So I think the number one thing is that it will help them, you know, hopefully increase their production values. And number two, you know, like I said, I'm not a big fan of Ring of Honor, but from everything that I've heard, Kerry Silkin is a great guy. He treats the guys very well. He treats his roster very well. So from what I've heard, you know, stand-up guy, so glad to see him. He's pretty much been the, you know, the entire financial, you know, backbone of Ring of Honor. So it's nice to see him have some of that pressure alleviated. You know, Ring of Honor's survived and at times thrived off of their DVD sales. You know, we were talking, they film every single show for DVD and they release it, and so they make a lot of money from that. But I think the number one thing, like I say, is production value. But it also is going to mean increased exposure. It's not going to be maybe on the level of a TNA or a WWE, but, you know, to become competitive with TNA, it's not going to take a whole lot. You know, of course, WWE is in a league of their own. They're in a completely other, you know, universe. They are their own universe, the WWE universe. But I just think that it's not going to take a whole lot for Ring of Honor to become competitive with TNA. TNA averages about 800 people to a typical live event, to a house show. They're doing about 10,000 pay-per-view buys on average per show. So it's not going to take a whole lot for Ring of Honor to become competitive with these guys. I mean, they're already drawing, you know, 300, 400, 500, sometimes 600 or 700 to their live events now. So they're not that far behind TNA when it comes to house shows. And with this, you know, increased exposure on television, and there are a lot of unhappy guys in TNA right now who have worked for Ring of Honor and enjoyed working for Ring of Honor. You take a guy like Samoa Joe, who had a great career in Ring of Honor. It's what got him noticed. Well, now Ring of Honor might have a little bit more money to throw at Samoa Joe. You know what? He might take what might be a small pay cut in his, you know, salary and go somewhere that he's going to be happy and be used properly. A lot of these guys, you know, we saw Chris Daniels the last time that he left TNA. He went back to Ring of Honor, and I think the reason that he came back to TNA was just an opportunity to make more money. You know, these guys have families. They've got bills. They've got mortgages, just like the rest of us. And it's no secret that a lot of the guys that are lower on the card in TNA aren't making a whole lot of money. So I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, even a Samoa Joe or maybe, you know, at first a Chris Sabin or maybe an Alex Shelley, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see these guys start to defect over to Ring of Honor, you know, especially if this thing is going to be a success for them, even a moderate success. I could see these guys defecting. So at TNA, WWE, they got nothing to be worried about. But TNA, I think that, you know, this could mean something to them, and it could be detrimental. So I think the TNA really needs to step things up now, because, you know, all this time they've been WWE light, and Ring of Honor has been on the back burner, and it never really mattered. And, you know, TNA's been able to jerk Ring of Honor around. You know, they would let stars appear, but then they wouldn't let them appear, and kind of, you know, always had the upper hand. But now, you know, Sinclair might not be on the same level as a Panda Energy, say, but they've got millions of dollars behind them as well. So, you know, it's going to bring Ring of Honor up to a more level playing field. So it's going to be an interesting thing. It's going to be a very interesting time. Just, you know, they say that professional wrestling is, it goes in cycles, and it's been in a down cycle, I'll admit, but I think that we might be rounding that curve. I think this down cycle might be, you know, rounding the curve, and there could be a hill, you know, just around the corner out of sight. So I think this could be a very good thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, you were talking about some of the bottom guys in TNA not making a lot, and one of the hard situations for the lower card TNA guys is that, you know, TNA handles independent bookings. So if you're an independent promoter and you want to book somebody in TNA, you have to go through the office, which, I mean, it's not like, you know, a Ring of Honor guy, you know, could be a different situation. Like, I know a lot of them work for Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, where they can get an extra paycheck, you know, on a weekend. Maybe Ring of Honor is not running a show. I think you're seeing a lot of the TNA talent missing indie dates because the way they book them. There's a booking fee to go through the TNA office and then book them for your independent show. So that's a good point you make about the talent. I guess only you know, we'll see over the course of time if Ring of Honor can be a competitive product. Definitely the exposure will be good. Maybe they'll start running some cities they're not currently running in. And I think you make a fair evaluation in terms of the house show business, because a lot of times you'll see Ring of Honor actually outdraw a TNA show. And I don't know. I look at the TNA shows. They're usually like six matches. A lot of times there's very few guys on the show because they're just booking singles matches. They're not booking, you know, tag matches. They're not booking those six-man, eight-man, ten-man tags that they always book for the pay-per-views, because, you know, they're using the very skeleton crew on the house shows to cut down on, you know, expenses to book, you know, fly guys into the house shows. And obviously, you know, you never see Sting defend the title at a house show because of his deal, you know. And that to me was always it's one of those things that I remember, like at WCW, sometimes you wouldn't see the top guys at their house shows. And so, you know, as a fan, if I'm seeing all these top guys on TV, you know, why would I give you the money if you come and run a show in my local area? Because a lot of the guys that I see prominently on TV will not be at this house show. So, it's going to be interesting to see if TNA maybe changes their model a little bit when it comes to house shows, especially that they don't draw very well at the house shows, and they're running these very little cities that you never heard of at times. And so it'll be interesting. This television deal for Ring of Honor could be good, but this is probably, I think you said offline, this might be the hit and miss. This might be the final straw for Ring of Honor. This could, you know, push them into the right direction, or ultimately this could be the end of Ring of Honor, because they're probably too big to be little and too little to be big.
I think that makes perfect sense. That's a great assessment of where they are currently. You know, that makes a lot of sense. And WCW, one of the things that killed them was their house show. You know, you had all these stars, all these top guys that are making great money, and then, you know, you go to a house show and you've got Jerry Flynn against Hugh Morris for your main event. Nobody's going to pay to see that. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, put WCW out of business. So TNA's going to make a lot of changes. They need to do a lot of things. You know, I don't think it's necessarily a good thing for them to be running the big giant arenas and stuff. You know, like I said, I was at Lockdown and it was half full and it looked horrible. You know, but I can think of some TNA pay-per-views where, you know, like the first one that came from Detroit at the CompuWare Arena, that sat about 4,000, and it was packed out. They sold the place out. Same thing with the Impact on the Road that we just saw. It was in a smaller building, and it looked great on television. You know, it was a small crowd, and it was a packed house. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with TNA running in these 3,000, 4,000-seat arenas. That's going to be something that they need to do. This is going to, you know, TNA is going to have to step up their game if the Ring of Honor experiment is successful at all. Ring of Honor tapes all of their shows on the road. They're not taping from a soundstage, you know, a studio. So there's going to be quite a difference in products. Another thing I think Ring of Honor has to do is that, you know, to me, there really are a cruiserweight X division type promotion, and that's kind of what they've got. They're kind of like a one trick pony. That's what they do, and they do it well. But in order for them to branch out and be successful on a more national level, I think that they're gonna have to change things. They don't need to be, you know, WWE. They don't need to be, you know, TNA. They don't need to try to be TNA trying to be WWE. You know, they need to find their own identity, but they're going to have to change things up just a little bit, you know, enough for the casual fan to come on board and say, yeah, I'll watch this. You know, Delirious can do some great things in the ring, but at the end of the day, the guy's 5'10 and weighs, 185 pounds. To me, you know, I don't care how many flips you can do, you know, in your 450 splash. You know, you don't look like a professional wrestler, and you know, I can get over that and still watch the product and enjoy it, but to your average casual fan who doesn't spend a lot of time on the internet, who doesn't follow the indies, who doesn't keep up with the behind the scenes things, they're going to see these smaller workers, and you know, automatically for the last 20 years we've been conditioned to only accept these big, huge, steroided, muscle-bound guys as the top guys. And it's taken a lot for, you know, someone like an Eddie Guerrero or Chris Jericho to break through to that mold. And then you look at the Ring of Honor roster and Chris Jericho or Eddie Guerrero makes these guys, you know, these guys make them look big. So they're going to have to change some things in the way that they present their product. But, you know, I think TNA should maybe possibly be worried. And I think that, you know, should the scales tip in the right direction for Ring of Honor, then TNA should definitely be worried.
You know, another thing, too, if Ring of Honor is going to be a major player, I know they do have contracts in TNA, Ring of Honor, but they're going to have to really lock up their guys. And we've already seen, like, Niles McGuinness, he jumped to TNA. Tyler Black signed a contract to go work for WWE Developmental. You know, you can't have guys defect off their shows. And I could see a situation where TNA says, you know, if they get a little bit, you know, Ring of Honor get a little momentum, they could say, hey, why don't we sign some of Ring of Honor's talent and bring them to TNA? Because obviously, as we've seen so far, the TNA has been a money pit. I mean, they spent the money on the talent. They've spent the money on keeping Samoa Joe and getting Ric Flair and Kurt Angle and all these guys. Sting, I mean, they paid him a lot of money to stay in TNA. So Ring of Honor is going to have to protect the salaries, protect their contracts, and protect their talent because, you know, it could be a situation where if they get a little bit bigger, a little more momentum, TNA can snatch up some of their talent.
That's where Sinclair is going to have to come in, and they're going to have to help lock these guys in. You know, they're going to have to step up to the plate, and they're going to have to offer some of these guys who are under contract to TNA currently or WWE currently. They're going to have to step up and counteroffer with something that's, you know, reasonable to what they're currently making. So, you know, there's a lot of factors in order for Ring of Honor to be successful. There's a lot of factors. There's a lot of things that have to fall in place, but, you know, as far as announcements go, you know, TNA did sign that Fox Sports Net deal, and it really, you know, they had to pay to be on the show, on the channel, and they got a horrible time slot, and it really did absolutely nothing for them except add to that big, giant hole that they've dug in the basement of, you know, TNA offices that they're in Nashville, Tennessee, and you know, they throw money in and light a match and you know, warm their hands by the fire, so...
Right.
You know, this deal for Ring of Honor, you know, they had the HD Net deal, and you know, it seemed that, and I heard so many times, so many rumors, so many rumblings, and that Mark Cuban and HD Net wanted to, you know, invest money in Ring of Honor, and they wanted to help them, you know, kind of step up in terms of production and all that kind of stuff, but it just never came to fruition, and ultimately the HD Net deal with Ring of Honor did them no good. So this seems like, you know, Ring of Honor, you know, I mean, to be honest with you, they've got nothing to lose, but they've got everything to lose. And that's basically where they stand right now. You know, Kerry Silkin, you know, sold the company. So it's not his company anymore. So he's got nothing to lose if they're a failure. But at the same time, you know, Ring of Honor as a company has everything to lose, because if Sinclair puts money into this thing and it doesn't do well and it doesn't draw, then, you know, most companies don't keep around, you know, a product that doesn't do well, that's not successful. I mean, you know, the perfect example is AOL Time Warner cut WCW because it just lost money. I don't care what you've done in the past. I don't care what people think you're capable of doing. The cold hard facts are you've lost millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, you're done. Well, you know, we're pulling the plug. So Ring of Honor, like I say, they've got nothing to lose, but they've got everything to lose. And I wish them the best. I hope that, you know, I hope that they do well. I'd like to see the landscape in professional wrestling change. I'd like to see Ring of Honor do well. I'd like to see TNA stick around at least. I don't want to see them go under anytime soon. But, you know, I'd like to see TNA stick around and Ring of Honor do well. And I'd like to see NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood grow. And I'd like to see, you know, there's an NWA affiliate based out of Florida called Pro Wrestling Fusion that draws some pretty good crowds and puts on some pretty good shows. I'd like to see them grow. You know, it's only going to take a few companies to get TV and get local TV, but have a strong local presence. You know, I'm fortunate enough to live in Columbus, Ohio. I get to see Pro Wrestling Ohio every week. It comes on SportsTime Ohio, the home of the Cleveland Indians, and it's broadcast throughout the entire state of Ohio. So in order for the territories to come back and that concept to be successful in 2011 and beyond, you know, I think that that's what it's going to come down to, a television presence. And NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood has a pretty stable, you know, television in place, and the same for PWO. So, you know, these guys need somewhere that they can work on television, and then that'll take them to the next step. WWE's tried to duplicate that for years with their developmental territories and having the guys work on television, but they just can't seem to get it right. And I see a lot of right things being done in Pro Wrestling Ohio and NWA Hollywood and down in Florida. So if the guys on top, if WWE continues to be successful and TNA can hash it out and they can get on the right track and they can stay in business, and if Ring of Honor can become, you know, a more profitable company on a you know, broader scope as far as a national, you know, scene is concerned, then it's great. There's a trickle-down effect, and if wrestling gets hot, then, you know, the indies start to pick up and things can really turn around. So I'm hoping, like I said, that this is, you know, we're heading around that curve and around the corner just out of sight is a hill, and things are going to get better.
We've been wanting competition in wrestling for a long time. And if nothing else, if it's not one versus two, it could be two versus three. That'd be fine with me. It's something to talk about again. I just hope, in the case of Ring of Honor, from my own perspective, that Sinclair adds a station in my area where I can actually see it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And I hope everybody out there, you know, they have access to a Sinclair station that they will at least be able to see the initial offerings of Ring of Honor, and definitely, you know, if you've never seen Ring of Honor before, you know, sample the product. And if you're tired of WWE and you're tired of TNA, because a lot of times I think TNA is a WWE light, you know, give Ring of Honor a chance. And as you said before, you know, definitely support your local independent promotions. These are the stars of tomorrow as well. So, and anyways, that's our thoughts on a Tuesday night, the official podcast of Gerwick.net. Definitely check out all your latest pro wrestling news at www.gerwick.net. And, of course, you can go to the audio section at the top and check out our previous podcast. I definitely recommend the interview I did yesterday on the 12th anniversary of the passing of Owen Hart with Smith Hart, the oldest Smith Hart child from Helen and Stu Hart. You can definitely check that out, and we definitely talk about everything with Owen Hart and his passing, his, you know, where he was in his career and the Montreal situation, and obviously the tragic situation that you know, claimed his life. And also, while you're at Gerwick.net in the audio section, you can actually subscribe to these podcasts. If you want to get the interviews and the podcasts and subscribe to it, you can definitely do that as well at Gerwick.net, GERWECK.net. And also on Gerwick.net, you can check out Adam Fairfax as he provides commentary on a plethora of topics as well. Definitely check out each individual post, and you may see a comment by none other than Adam Fairfax. So we appreciate him doing that and being with us for this podcast tonight.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure and an honor. It's always a good time to talk wrestling with the man behind the number one news site in professional wrestling today. And for the last, how many years has it been now, Steve? 13, 14?
Yeah, this is since 97. So, yeah, so this is, 14 years now?
14 years. The number one news site in professional wrestling for the last 14 years. That's Gerwick.net. A lot of people like to come out and brag, like to say things, you know, but number one, if you don't hear it at Gerwick.net, if you didn't hear it there, you didn't read it there, then it's probably not true. So, you know, continue to check out the website as often as possible, and, you know, we've got some great interviews up there. You just did one with BG James, which is a great listen as well, so definitely check those out. And again, thank you for having me again tonight, Steve. Always a pleasure, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.